Thank you for the to the symposium organizers for the invitation to be here and to have a chance to talk to you a little bit about some of the work that we've been doing actually for quite some time. I'm going to be talking about this parasite. This is Leishmania shigazi, or Leishmania infantum in the New World, which is vectored. The principal vector is the sandfly Leishmania longipalpus, about which we've already heard a little bit. One of the features of this parasite that initially interested us is that the parasite causes two very dramatically different pathologies over its range. The parasite and its sandfly vector occur from southern Mexico to northern Argentina. In South America, this parasite causes typical visceral leishmaniasis and is a problem there. However, at sites in Central America, in Costa Rica, Honduras, and Nicaragua, there are reports of this parasite primarily, although not exclusively, causing what's been called atypical cutaneous leishmaniasis. So the parasite in South America causes life-threatening visceral leishmaniasis, but in Central America primarily causes this more or less benign form of cutaneous leishmaniasis. And this cutaneous form of leishmaniasis differs from typical cutaneous leishmaniasis in as much as the lesions are nodular. They don't ulcerate as a typical cutaneous leishmaniasis infection would. So we were interested in exploring why a parasite would cause two dramatically different pathologies over its geographic range, and there are a number of possible explanations for this. It's possible that the parasite in the two regions are genetically different, and different in ways that influence the pathology that they produce. Similarly, there may be genetic differences among the human hosts who become infected, or in their ecology, in their nutritional status, or in their immunity with respect to prior exposure to the parasite producing this more benign disease. Now, with respect to genetic differences among those parasites, there are two studies that have been conducted that I'm aware of that suggest that they do not differ genetically. This was one study based on sequence data from kinetoplast DNA, which were not able to find differences between parasites isolated from visceral compared to atypical cutaneous patients. And then a second set of a study by Campo Ponce more recently, looking at virulence genes and comparing isolates from patients with the two pathologies. And again, they did not find consistent differences. With respect to differences in the host, there have not, to my knowledge, been really very intensive studies done, but epidemiological evidence where this atypical disease has been studied do not support the fact that there are differences that would explain this. So we thought, as entomologists, that it may be worth exploring differences among the sandfly vectors, and that there may be differences in the vectors that influence the pathology of Leishmania shigazi. And so that's what I'll be talking with you about here today. Leishmania longipalpus was originally described from Brazil in 1912. As I mentioned, it has a broad geographic range extending from southern Mexico to northern Argentina. But more recent work, including some work from my own laboratory, suggests that, in fact, Leishmania longipalpus is not a single species, and in fact is a complex of closely related, morphologically very similar species, and that, at least based on work that has been done in my lab, we've identified four distinct clades that we believe probably represent species. At least we're pretty convinced that three of them do. But most importantly for the, and I should say that there have been other laboratories, a large number of laboratories, looking at Lutzomyia longipalpus from the perspective as of it being a species complex, and there's not a lot of agreement. I think there's universal agreement that it is, in fact, a species complex, but the number of species and their geographic distributions really remain not clearly sorted out. But for my purposes, based on our studies, definitely we believe in Central America compared to populations in Brazil, that these populations do in fact represent distinct species. And I think probably the best data supporting this come from some work that we did quite some time ago, where we established laboratory colonies or worked with laboratory colonies and did hybridization experiments between Brazilian, Colombian, and Costa Rican populations, and found that in all cases of hybrids done in both directions, between all combinations of these three laboratory populations, that in fact the resulting hybrid males were sexually sterile. And I think that from our perspective, that establishes pretty clearly that these do in fact represent different species. But I won't say much more, any more about that, because there's still a lot of work that needs to be done to sort that all out. But from our perspective, the question was, do these sibling species differ in ways that may influence the pathology produced by Leishmania shigazi? And we worked primarily with two colonies that we established, one from Costa Rica, from a village called Brasilito in northwestern Costa Rica. And if you recall, this is an area where shigazi causes atypical cutaneous leishmaniasis. And then a second colony from La Pina Caves in Brazil, in an area where shigazi causes visceral leishmaniasis. And again, this is work that was done quite some time ago, and these are famous photographs of Alan Warburg's arms. I won't go into the story about how this, which is an interesting story, about how this observation was initially discovered, but suffice it to say that the reaction from the bite of uninfected flies from Brazil, which is here, these photos taken 12 hours post-feeding, are dramatically different from the reaction that we get from flies from Costa Rica. This is not an allergic response. These erythema are in fact produced by a vasodilator in the saliva of these flies. And so you can see that with respect to the response, that the saliva from these two populations of flies appears to be dramatically different. And so we did some studies quantifying how much of this gene is being expressed in the salivary glands of flies from a number of different populations. This vasodilator is a small protein, a 7-kilodalton protein known as maxidilin. And you can see that in the population from La Pina Cave, which gave this dramatic red erythema, compared with populations from Costa Rica, there are 45-fold less messenger RNA for this protein. And so we believe the saliva of the Brazilian strains have as much as 45-fold less of this vasodilator maxidilin in their saliva. And we were beginning to think that this may, in fact, there may be a relationship between the presence of this salivary peptide and visceralization of the parasite. And I think as Peter Wolf introduced this, so I'm going to go through this quickly, it's been fairly well established, although there is still some contention, that sandfly saliva exacerbates infection with leishmanial parasites. So this is a paper, and there have been a number of studies like this that have been reported. This is just one that was reported by Yasmin Belkade back in 1998. If you inject parasite alone, which and then look at the course of the infection, in terms of the diameter of the skin lesion that's produced. These experiments were done using Leishmania major. You could see that if you inject parasites alone, that you get a course of infection that is presented here in blue. But if you add saliva from the vector with the parasite and then inject that in fact the lesions come on quicker, they're larger, and they persist for a longer period of time. And these experiments have been repeated in a number of laboratories, as I mentioned. So there's experimental evidence that, in fact, there is a relationship between sandfly saliva and the course of disease that's caused by leishmanial parasites. This is just an example of some work that we were involved with that show, and again, I think Peter did a good job introducing this, that in fact, even specifically with Maxodilin, the protein that we're working with, if you immunize animals with synthetic Maxodilin, you get protection. So this is again the size of the lesion over time with parasite plus Maxodilin in naive animals, and this is the course of infection in animals that have been immunized prior to infection with Maxodilin. And you can see that the lesions are much smaller, they come on later, and that they cure much more quickly. More recently, there's been some work that just this year from NIH working with all of the experimental work looking at the influence of sandfly saliva on Leishmania infection up until this report dealt with cutaneous Leishmaniasis. And that's probably, I think, fairly safe to say that cutaneous Leishmaniasis is just a much easier system to work with in the lab. But some experiments reported here just this year show that this one salivary protein, it's a protein from Lutzomyia longa palpis called LJM19. They were able to demonstrate that immunization with this protein protected animals from visceral Leishmaniasis. And this is the first report of that, of salivary proteins providing protection to visceral Leishmaniasis. And this is just an accompanying figure from this paper showing that looking at survivorship. So in animals that were infected using control, and these were DNA vaccines, using control that by 6 months post-infection, all the animals were dead. Whereas those animals that were immunized, there was 100% survival all the way out to 8 months post-infection. So immunization with salivary proteins from Lutzomyia longa palpis does seem to provide protection against visceral Leishmaniasis. Now, we're interested, though, in looking to determine whether or not naturally occurring variation in salivary proteins is affecting the course of the disease in nature. So we're basically doing or looking at a situation in nature that's providing a natural experiment for very similar phenomena. So we wanted to answer the question, do Lutzomyia longa palpis sibling species differ in susceptibility to Leishmania Shigazi infection as a first approach towards addressing that larger question? We infected both, we established colonies of Brasilito flies from Costa Rica and Lapinha flies from Brazil. We infected them using membrane feeders with 2 × 10^6 milliliters of Leishmania Shigazi, this particular strain right here. At 5 days post-infection, we took a sample of flies and then determined the infection rate for the two colonies of flies for this particular strain. And as you can see from the results presented here, that in effect there was no difference in the infection rate between these two laboratory colonies. So the two colonies, the Costa Rican and Brazilian colonies, were equally susceptible to infection with this particular strain of Leishmania Shigazi. We did quantitative RT-PCR to describe the parasite burden in these experimentally infected flies. And again, we found no significant difference between the two strains. So at 5 days post-infection, we found by quantitative RT-PCR, roughly three times 10^5 promastigotes in these flies. And I think this was consistent with what's been reported in from other labs with experimental infection. So do these sibling species differ with respect to susceptibility to Leishmania shigazi infection? Based on our experimental results, the answer is no. They're equally susceptible to parasite infection. So the next question that we had with respect to exploring the larger question is, do Lutzomyelongepalpus sibling species differ in their ability to transmit Leishmania shigazi? And what we did in this case is infected flies, held them, and what the procedure we use is slightly different from what the folks at NIH use. We actually allow the flies to oviposit. And so then the infected flies are allowed to feed on naive animals to establish infection. We allowed flies following oviposition, these were infected flies, to feed on naive hamsters. Each of the sites where an infected fly bit were marked with a marker, and then immediately a skin biopsy was done, basically to remove the site bite, and then the number of parasites delivered by those infected flies were quantified by RT-PCR. And these are the results of those experiments. We found, for the two colonies, we found the flies to be infected. These were slightly higher infections, roughly 5 to 6 times 10^5 parasites per fly. And for the two flies, in terms of the number of parasites they delivered when they bit, roughly 9 times 10^4. And there was no significant difference between the two colonies. Now, I want to add just one caveat to these results. Following these experiments, we determined that, in fact, the Brasilito colony may have been contaminated by cross-mating with the Lapina colony. So these results are a little bit questionable, and these experiments need to be repeated. Unfortunately, these things happen in the lab with these flies. But based on those experiments, with that caveat, we're saying no, that in terms of the number of parasites that are introduced via the bite, the numbers delivered by these two colonies are not different. So we did experimental infections. We looked at by infecting the two colonies of flies, as I described earlier. We allowed these to feed on naive hamsters, and then sacrificed the animals 4 months post-infection, and then quantified by RT-PCR the parasite burden in one population of hamsters that were infected via the bite of Costa Rican flies compared to a population that were infected via the bite of Brazilian flies. And these are the results for parasite burden in the spleen. And you can see they're dramatically different. The parasites, or the hamsters that were bitten by Costa Rican flies, had relatively light infections or no infection at all in the spleen 4 months post-infection, whereas the majority of animals that were infected via the bite of Brazilian flies had relatively heavy parasite infections in the spleen 4 months post-infection. And the results for the liver were even more dramatic. None of the flies had parasites in the liver 4 months post-infection. When the infection was established via the bite of flies from Costa Rica, whereas a good proportion of the animals that were infected via the bite of Brazilian flies had heavy parasite burdens in the liver. So to summarize, Lutzomyelongepalpus from Central and South America are not the same species, and I believe there's a general consensus that is true. Central and South American species differ with respect to the composition of their saliva. The two species are equally susceptible to infection with Leishmania shigazi. The two species are equally capable of transmitting shigazi to hamsters, we think, but those experiments need to be repeated. And the pathology pathology produced by shigazi infections via transmission by the two flies are dramatically different and are consistent with what we're seeing happening in nature. So in conclusion, we've provided evidence that differences in the composition of insect vector saliva may have a profound effect on the pathology of the pathogens that they transmit, and that this may explain discontinuities in the distribution of disease pathology for vector-borne diseases in nature. These findings may add a new dimension to our understanding of the relationship between vectors and pathogens and disease. I'd just like to quickly acknowledge people who were involved in doing this work. Prior to my coming to UC Davis, I was at the University of Texas Medical Branch, and a graduate student, Rania Milleron, participated in this work, along with postdoc John Paul Mutebi. Lin Sung was a faculty colleague at UTMB, and Y Yin was a technician in the lab. And at UC Davis, Fred Drape, who's now at Keele University, Dia El Naheem, who was a postdoc, who's now at NIH, Melody Schmidt, and Claudio Meneses, who luckily for me are still with me in the lab at UC Davis. And that's it. Thank you very much. Yes. Yep. Guy with a haircut like mine.
So, have you done the experiment where you infect the hamsters with just in vitro parasite and then combine the saliva of the two different species?
No, we haven't. That's a good experiment to do, but and it's one we'd like to do. And as I mentioned, unfortunately, we've lost this Costa Rican colony. So someone's got the horrible task of traveling to Costa Rica and collecting more flies. That's something we need to do. But yeah, well, there were a whole series of experiments that we really were gearing up to do and haven't done because we're now pretty sure that we've lost this colony. Yeah.
Any other questions?
Great. I don't know, have you guys ever measured interferon gamma levels in these animals from the different insect bites?
Have we measured interferon gamma in animals bitten by these two populations of flies? We have a series of experiments that we'd like to do looking at differences in cytokine profiles from different maxodilins, but we haven't done those. No, we have not done those experiments.
Because I'm thinking in terms of obviously the maxodilins.
Yes.
But I wonder if there's, you know, some sort of other molecules.
No. Yeah, and I make a point of not saying that we think that for sure that maxodilin is causing this phenomenon. It may be. It would be interesting if it is, and we're interested in exploring that. But there are many salivary proteins in this sandfly, and it may be a combination of them or other factors in the saliva that are having this influence on the pathology. So, Fauci.
Yeah, you talk about pathology, but can you make it the histopathology of
yes.
lesion bite?
Yeah, we have. We've made the slides. They haven't been. Lin Sung, our colony at UTMB, was actually doing the histology, but unfortunately a hurricane came in and that work has been disrupted. But we plan on doing that.
I think that the histopathology is going to give you a lot of good information about the behavior of which cells are over there.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're going to start, you're going to be able to start the infection.
Yeah.
And another one not.
Yeah, I agree. And those are experiments that we've actually proposed to do.
Okay, one more question. Brian, have you been able to find any parasites within the skin out for 4 months?
Yeah, that's a real good question, and I meant to mention. So that's where the hamster breaks down as a model for this atypical, because we don't find. You know, it would have been nice if actually the animals bitten with flies from Costa Rica developed a skin, a cutaneous infection, but we can't find, we have not been able to find parasites in the skin.
RT-PCR?
No.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
Sir.